Because you know I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your baritone saxophone of music news. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. Cause I got that boom boom that all the boys chase. And all the right junk in all the right places. I see the magazine.
And you're listening to It's All About That Bass by Meghan Trainor. Our guest is Joe Coscarelli. Hey, Joe.
How are you?
Joe is our new music reporter at the Times and just did a story about Meghan Trainor for this weekend's Arts and Leisure. You met Ms. Trainor?
I did. We had a sushi lunch at her hotel.
So you did not meet her in Nantucket?
I did not meet her in Nantucket.
There was no island vacation in this for you?
No. Although she is definitely reps Nantucket.
Okay. Before we start talking about Nantucket, which I think is crucial to the understanding of Meghan Trainor, the first thing most of us learned about Meghan Trainor when we first heard her, most of us, when we first heard that song, It's All About That Bass, which spent, what, 8 weeks at number one?
8 weeks at number one, yep.
Was that we learned that she was, she's 21 now. Maybe she was 20 at the time
sure.
when it first came out.
Right.
And that she was a country songwriter.
She started as a country songwriter.
So to what extent is she a country songwriter? Tell me the story of Meghan Trainor, country songwriter.
Almost not at all. Mm-hmm. I think she lucked into a gig in Nashville with a publisher. She was writing songs since she was a teenager, going to songwriting expos around the country, traveling around, trying to get discovered. And finally, the one who picked her up was a woman named Carla Wallace from a publisher based in Nashville. So when it came time for her to decide between college and being a professional songwriter, she decided to pack up and move alone to Nashville. While there, she just sort of got into the scene and was writing and ended up placing a few tracks with Rascal Flatts.
Right.
And that was sort of her first foray into the music industry.
Now, this is something I should know the answer to, but I don't. Did those tracks for Rascal Flatts ever get recorded?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're on
Rascal Flatts albums. A bigger Rascal Flatts fan than me would know which ones.
And are they Meghan Trainor-esque?
I don't think you can spot her in them. No,
right.
She's can be chameleon-like in her writing, and she's been doing it for so long in so many different styles that country was just one mode.
So she grew up in Nantucket, and her father is a musician,
yes.
Right? A keyboardist?
Yep.
Maybe plays in church?
Mm-hmm. They had a little family band. Played around town.
And her aunt, I think, is really into soca.
Yes.
Is that right?
She tells the story of being on vacation in Trinidad with her family, including her aunt, who was tagging along to babysit for her.
Okay.
And they were at a street fair or something, and there was a truck going by, and a soca musician was performing on the truck, and he caught the eye of her aunt, or one way or the other, and she facilitated them to go on a date later that night.
No kidding.
That's the story that she tells.
Wow. So she was there from the beginning.
She was there from the moment
of her aunt's interest
in a soca musician, and they ended up getting married.
And they still make music together, right?
I think so.
This is a band that is now based in Nantucket.
The soca group. Yeah.
With the guy from Trinidad.
Yes.
Her uncle. The band is called Island Fusion or something like
that. I think that's right.
And Meghan grew up singing in this band.
Yes.
So, you know, when she talks about being deeply interested in soca and really and understanding the feel of that music and that kind of rhythm, she's not lying. I mean, this is something that she really did grow up with.
She did, yes.
Yeah.
She's all about, no pun intended, she's all about her rap and her soca and her island music and reggae. Those are the things that she holds dear musically.
So the part that I find sort of sweet about this story is that she seems like a very ordinary but smart and directed young person. And so her ascension to the top of the Billboard charts seems like an encouraging story.
Sure.
So what are the steps in that story? I mean, you kind of gave me the condensed version a second ago, but how did it actually work? She grows up, she's kind of interested in music and playing, and then eventually in writing songs. Then what happens?
So she's in Nashville. She's placed a few country records that she doesn't care about because her heart's not in country. And she gets paired through her publisher with a songwriter by the name of Kevin Kadish. They have their first session, and in this first session, they are spitballing ideas, getting to know each other, and find that they both have this love for 50s and 60s pop music, and specifically doo-wop. They come up with this idea that they'll cut a little EP of doo-wop songs because no one's really doing it at the moment. They were just riffing with one another. Kevin has this song title in his master list, All Bass, No Treble. You know, they're working on ideas, and Megan says, well, what if the bass is about, you know, about my body and,
right,
you know, my heavier lower end? And so they come up with this playful pun on bass, and they cut a demo. That's what we hear on the radio today, all about that bass. So they send it to the labels, trying to sell it to an established artist. Because of the specificity of the song, the labels didn't have anyone to sing it,
yeah,
even though it was clearly a catchy tune. Finally, it makes its way to Epic Records, and L.A. Reid hears it, knows it's a smash because that's his job.
Mm-hmm.
He brings her into audition. She's never performed the song before because she's used to cutting demos and moving on to the next one. But she performs it for him on her little ukulele, and he says, we have to sign this girl.
It's a mixture of her being able to write songs for other people, of knowing that drill of writing, you know, a Rihanna song,
yes,
a Beyonce song, a whatever, in the register and working with the sort of performative aura of those people.
Mm-hmm.
She knows how to do that. But in this particular instance, she decided to write a song that wouldn't really fit anybody except her.
And I think she was just having fun. She didn't think that this one was necessarily for the radio. It just came out from the way she tells it. And, you know, then it gets to the labels and she says, you know, like, what, you guys don't have someone who is in a size 2 and can hit a high note but can also rap a little bit and do this doo-wop thing and, you know, work these melodies? And there just wasn't that artist on the radio,
mm-hmm,
and on the charts. So she became the only artist that could sing the song.
Let's hear another track from, this is actually from the EP that came out a little while ago. The EP is called Title. That's also the name of the full album that's coming out next week. But anyway, let's hear another track that you can hear on the EP called Lips Are Moving. I know you're lying, 'cause your lips are moving. Tell me, do you think I'm dumb? I might be young, but I ain't stupid. Talking around in circles with your tongue. I gave you bass, you gave me sweet talk. Saying I'm your number one. But I know you're lying, 'cause your lips are moving. Baby, don't you know I'm dumb? Hey. If your lips are moving, if your lips are moving, if your lips are moving, then you're lying. So that's Lips Are Moving from Meghan Trainor, which is currently in the top 10, as well as It's All About That Bass.
Yes, they're both now in the top 10.
So one thing I read Meghan Trainor saying was that she was describing, you know, why her music has been successful and sort of what market she managed to reach. And she described her music as being, it's too old for Radio Disney, but too young for Kesha. Do you think that's right?
It's not quite true, because the song did have quite a life on Radio Disney in a slightly edited form without a few curse words that, mm-hmm, she sprinkles into the explicit version. But it just has this innocence of sound that has appealed widely to children of all ages. And this is something that Megan herself recognizes. She says, I didn't know that the babies were going to love my song so much, but everywhere you turn, there are little kids singing this song whenever it comes on at the drugstore, the grocery store, the radio.
Because it's well known that preteens love 1950s rock and roll with baritone saxophones.
You know, I think she has a style that incorporates these safe throwback vintage things that make us feel comfortable that we've all heard before.
Right.
But she's able to spice it up by throwing in a little bit of rapping, a little bit of hip hop slang. She's bringing booty back, she says.
Sure.
There are these modern signposts that sort of guide people into saying, this isn't a song for your grandparents. This is a song for young people.
Right. So it's slightly funny in that sense. Because I feel like the 50s stuff, that part is very interesting to me. It's really like what she's dealing with is the representation of the 50s that we heard in the 70s and the 80s. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Greece or whatever.
Right. Well, she is 21 years old, so.
Yeah. Not to underestimate her knowledge. I get the feeling that she's actually, you know, listened widely. But it's that kind of thing. It's sort of like third or fourth generation version of the 50s.
Right. And I think one of the things that she appreciates about that old music, which she grew up with, is the humor in it, which is apparent on the album and in the single. You know, she says that she and Kevin Kadish bonded initially over the song If You Want to Be Happy. You know, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a pretty woman your wife. The idea being marry an ugly woman. And she just thinks that's the funniest thing. And she tried to bring, I think, that lightness and that playful vibe of relationships that's in these 50s and 60s songs into modern day vernacular.
So let's talk about the oddness of this for a minute. I mean, we can rationalize it and talk about, oh yeah, she hit that market that's right between Radio Disney and Kesha. Her records code safe. Kids understand this implicitly, and they know that this music is for them, and it's not too high a reach and all that stuff.
There's no danger.
There's no danger.
In the sound.
But in a way, that's talking about what it's not. But for a minute, let's talk about what it is. Here's a white girl from Nantucket. Here's a white girl from the Northeast. In her video for All About That Bass, she seems to be mocking white preppies.
I'm sure she grew up with.
Which plenty. I'm sure she grew up with, you know? I'm sure she saw these people in Nantucket. And then also, it's fascinating to me how NRBQ has a part in this story of the ascension
the
of
Maine. The bar band of bar bands.
The bar band of bar bands, and incredibly popular in places like Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard because she has some sort of family connection.
Yeah, her uncle, I NRBQ. Believe, is in NRBQ.
And then Al Anderson, who was in NRBQ, is a songwriter who lives in Nashville, and I think he was helpful in connecting her.
Yes, she has these connections to the music business in her family, and she grew up in a musical home and with it all around her.
And then apparently Johnny Spampinato, also from NRBQ, gave her first guitar lessons.
Yes.
And so she grew up in this place where, you know, there are these clubs that have been open for forever, like the Chicken Box or whatever. Mm-hmm. She knew about, you know, the business of live music and bar bands and what that's all about. And she also grew up in this environment where if you are talented, and it's noticeable that you are talented as a young person, you're really celebrated. You're in the paper,
definitely,
the island paper.
Definitely, you know? Yeah. Her parents own a jewelry store on Nantucket, and she said, you know, she would perform out front, and everyone knew her as the girl who could sing. And in high school, you know, she was the singer. That's just the, you know, small town. Everyone gets the label, whether it's head cheerleader or talented vocalist.
When you talked to her, did you get a sense of self-confidence?
Definitely. She's exceptionally charming, very easy to talk to. She socializes in a way that somebody would who went across cliques in high school. She wasn't a popular girl. She wasn't a nerd. She was the kind of girl that everyone likes. And she had something that made her stand out, which was her vocal talent and her musical talent. So she sort of never needed to fit herself into one of these boxes and could just get by on her charm and her talent.
So what we've seen from her so far is, you know, this like fluky hit, It's All About That Bass, which managed to deliver this sort of self-empowerment message of, you know, you're beautiful, you should respect yourself, doesn't matter that you don't look like a model, et cetera, et cetera. And then she's got these other songs. Maybe you can describe what some of the songs are about, like Dear Future Husband.
Dear Future Husband, again, in this novelty, doo-wop, throwback way, addresses relationships and sort of says, you know, I'm a strong-minded woman, but also it elevates beyond this love yourself message into I'm 21 and I'm going to have sexual relationships and I'm going to be with men. And these are the things you need to know about me because I'm strong and I'm independent. But you need to recognize that I'm gonna make my own choices and don't mess with it. But it comes in this sort of retro feminist rapping where she's saying like a wife on a sitcom, maybe like, I'm going to sleep on the left side of the bed and you're going to get over it.
But it puts being in a married relationship as kind of the desired endpoint.
That's certainly the goal. And
the goal.
All About That Bass, you know, received criticism on a similar point, which is, you know, you're still appealing to men. It's still all about what boys will like.
Right.
Whether or not they'll like you, if you're not a model, you're still ultimately here for a man's pleasure.
So is there a version of her on this upcoming record that comes out next week that differs from that?
You know, it's all pretty much along those lines. Mm-hmm. And she's adamant about saying, I'm not trying to make any political statement. I'm just telling you how I've grown up and what I've learned in my unsuccessful romantic relationships, which she's not shy about saying she wants. She's a little bit lost in terms of the larger political message of her music. She mm-hmm. sees it as strictly her story. And, you know, she says when she was growing up, she got the love yourself talk. That's obviously apparent in All About That Bass. But she says she didn't get the talk that said, you know, make sure he takes you to dinner first. So she sort of fell into, you know, maybe more modern relationships, hookup culture and what have you. And now she's sort of yearning for this romanticism of, you know, being treated like a lady.
It's interesting that you say that she sees her songs as strictly her story. Because, I mean, in a sense, yes, of course, that's true because she, you know, she's a songwriter and she's involved in the writing of most of her work. But it's more than that. She's trying to create a space for songs that are actually about someone like her, not someone like Rihanna, not someone like the typical stars of the moment. Do you think that that's what people are picking up on? In other words, like, is this the reason why everything worked for her? The sense of, like, I hate to say this word, but authenticity?
I think there is this sheen of authenticity that she's good at highlighting. She knows that she's a regular girl.
Did she make it up?
I mean, no, she's a young woman from Nantucket.
Okay, yes.
She wasn't put on this earth to be Britney Spears. She just strummed at her acoustic guitar until she wrote the catchiest song of last year. And she sees that, you know, as the thing that makes her different.
So, Joe, you saw Meghan Trainor perform recently.
I did. I saw her two times in the same day for Jingle Ball at Madison Square Garden, as well as the Jingle Ball pre-show, which they do for a smaller group of people, kids, I think, who maybe don't go to the full concert.
Wow.
Sort of an industry event.
Jingle Ball itself is maybe 4 hours long or something like that. Is the mini Jingle Ball only like half an hour?
It goes throughout the afternoon, but I think it's more of a come and go as you please type event. But she had, you know, she played two songs at Jingle Ball, and she played maybe four at the pre-show.
Wow. More at the pre-show?
More at the pre-show.
How did it come off? Maybe you should explain the fact that even though she's seasoned and she's been performing all her life, in a sense, she hasn't quite been performing like this.
Right. So now she's a pop star. When you hit number one with a freak single, you become a pop star overnight. And they put her on stage like that now, and she has a little troupe of backup dancers, four backup dancers, and she's in charge, and she's with the microphone, no instruments, playing over pre-recorded tracks, and she looks a little new up there. She is a rookie. She's not a dancer, but they have her doing some moves. She doesn't have a guitar or a ukulele to sort of ground her.
She's got to get that ukulele.
She's got to bring back the ukulele. I think that'll be key.
Was she doing things that echoed, you know, movements and ideas from the video?
Yeah, it was. It's a little bit of that, taking playful dance steps and swinging her arms around and some sassy head swings mm-hmm. and things like that. But, you know, she's very deliberate about hitting her marks and while also trying to hit the notes in the song. And you could see her thinking through the performance in a way that doesn't quite feel natural yet.
Was she able to show her voice well enough? She's got a decent voice.
She has a pretty strong voice, and I think it does a disservice to have her thinking about choreographed steps in addition to her vocal chops.
Right.
And over time, maybe she gets a live band that adds a little fullness to the thing. Maybe she can strum a guitar or a ukulele for a few songs and let her be the musician that she is instead of trying to make her into a pop star that she's not.
So she's got to have some sort of performative persona, and she's only at the beginning stages of that. I wonder where it could lead. In this music, we were talking about ways in which this song took people by surprise because there's a lot that it doesn't sound like. But there's a stylized retro quality to it that kept making me think of English pop.
A lot of people think she's British when they hear the song.
Is that right?
Definitely. I've heard that, you know, anecdotally from quite a few people who just assume that because it sounds a little bit like Adele, maybe she's English.
And maybe Amy Winehouse.
There's a little Amy Winehouse in there without the edge.
Did she talk about that at all? Is she interested in that music? Is she conscious about it?
I think she's just a student of so many styles that she's absorbed and can sort of wield at her discretion.
Right.
That she just has this arsenal as a songwriter of different tricks and weapons that she's picked up. And she deploys them when they work.
Right.
I don't think she has a passion for these English singers necessarily.
Right.
She's a good mimic, and she can spin it into something just original enough.
She's a synthesist.
She definitely is.
And in fact, now that I'm just remembering something that I read, somebody asked her, like, so who are you into? Mm-hmm. You know, who are you really into? And she said, Bruno Mars. He's God. I mean, like, where do you go from Bruno Mars? That's the top.
And he's another one of these
guys who can operate in
a lot of different styles and, you know, can write some songs.
That made perfect sense coming out of her mouth. Well, we will go out with Dear Future Husband from Meghan Trainor. And thank you, Joe Coscarelli, for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Take me on a date. I deserve a bay. And don't forget the flowers every universal ray. Because if you treat me right, buying what you need.
That's our show. Thanks for listening and Happy New Year. You can read Joe Coscarelli's piece on Meghan Trainor coming out on this weekend's Arts and Leisure, nytimes.com/music. You can go to our Spotify playlist and hear Meghan Trainor and things related there too. Our producers are Jeremy Egner and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and we'll see you next week.